You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm the infamous Brad Jackson.
It's about that time, folks, so light them if you got them. Time for this week's cigar pick.
Oh, yeah.
What are we smoking this week, Brad?
We are smoking the Antonio Dark Cornhole.
Dark Cornhole? What?
No, not Cornhole, you asshole.
It's the Hoyo de Nicaragua Antonio Dark Corora.
Corora. My Spanish and tongue rolling and pronouncing of the H's. That's what she said. But, you know, definitely full flavor profile here. You know, I'm definitely picking up on more spicy than I am sweet.
Yeah, but, it's got a sweet and spicy, but it's like an ultra robusto. I mean, it's strong.
Yeah, but you've got the Nicaraguan. Joe, pronounce the C word again for us.
Nicaraguan Corojo Oscuro, wrapper, Nicaraguan binder and fillers.
Yep, and you know, I gotta say, man, I'm digging this cigar. This is the robusto size here, and I think it's about a gauging, probably about a 52, maybe 54 ring gauge here. Yeah, a little bit smaller like than some of the cigars we smoke, but it definitely packs a punch, which I'm enjoying.
Yeah, it's got a dark, oily, seal brown wrapper that, yeah, so it's definitely one of your darker Maduros, and it is definitely a full-strength Nicaraguan cigar.
Yep, so, I mean, very complex here. You know, at this portion, probably in the first third of the cigar, so... You know, once we get into the main segment, we'll recap on the second, you know, probably the second, third, and then, you know, wrapping up our final thoughts after nerd news. Definitely give you guys your opinion or our opinion on the final third. So,
yep. Well, with that, we'll be right back with the main segment, and we're going to celebrate 420 as only two guys that don't do drugs can by talking about our favorite stoner movies. Be right back.
Stay tuned.
Buenos días, Pedro. ¿Quieres que te corte el pelo?
La frontera de los Estados Unidos.
And welcome back to the show. This is our, since this will be coming out the day after 420, as you know, all the potheads in the world always talk about that. We're going to celebrate this, as I said in the intro, as two guys that never really did drugs can by talking about stoner movies.
Yeah. And we're going to try to keep this as clean and non-political and partisan as possible.
Yeah, we're going to, like I said, we're going to do a whole little... was it a parental warning at the start? You know, we do not condone illegal drug use or, you know, use of marijuana unless you live in Colorado or one of those places where it is.
And even then, the feds can still override the state law, which we're not getting into the politics of all the matter, because me personally, I don't care what you do in the privacy of your own home, as long as you're not killing or, you know, hurting somebody else. More power to you, man. I'm not going to hate. I'm done.
Freaking hater. I know, but yeah, stoner films. That's something that, you know, even as someone who, like I said, have never been into drugs, never been into drug culture, I always found the stoner films like just freaking hilarious. I mean, they were like some growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, those were some of the funniest like comedy movies at the time. I mean, I wasn't old enough to watch them when they were out, but you know, they were in the time of our parents, and you know, they were showing me their films as I got old enough to, you know, watch some of this shit. You know, these movies have always been just some of the funnier movies.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a great escape from reality in a lot of instances. I mean, you know, and some of them, you know, actually carry some pretty positive and, you know, some good messages overall. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's good to break away from a lot of the violence and everything else that you see in some movies. And you know what? Yeah. Just have a little fun in life.
And back in that time, too, you see a lot of these comedies are more the sitcom type comedy, you know, the family comedy. And this was probably like some of the first adult, you know, more adult themed comedies other than, say, your slasher flicks, which not really supposed to be a comedy, but they're pretty funny. I've got to read this because this cracked me up. The according to Wikipedia, the definition of a stoner film is a subgenre of comedy films that revolve around the use of cannabis. Typically, such movies show cannabis in a comic and positive fashion. Generally, cannabis use is one of the main themes and inspires much of the plot. They're often representative of cannabis culture. Do you agree with this definition?
I mean, I do. And, you know, the only thing is I would like to see it elaborated. And that's one of the things that we're going to cover in the podcast is it's real easy to say stoner film. But, I mean, you have different categories or, yeah, you know, different takes of, you know, said films where, you know, some may be in search of said cannabis. Others may be, you know, highly influenced because of the effects of said cannabis. And others are just films that you'd want to watch if you partake in the cannabis.
Yeah, like before we actually get
how many
a break,
more times are going to reference cannabis.
Yeah, I think we've said it enough. It's like the Necronomicon. You shouldn't say it anymore.
I can't say the C word or the N word.
But yeah, before we actually break it down into what we think are the subcategories of this, you know, the classic versus the more modern stoner film, because we've really seen a resurgence of it lately. But let's start with the origins of where it came from.
Yeah, and you know, this is actually, there's a lot of debate. I mean, I was watching a documentary earlier today on 420, and you know, basically an interviewer is going around to a couple of colleges basically asking people the origins of 420, and pretty much everybody's like, yeah, we don't know where it originated from, but we're here for a cause. So in documentary, the editor of High Times magazine basically got an opportunity to go and meet the people behind the origins. And in fact, it had nothing to do with police code. It was actually just a group of five San Rafael High School friends in California known as the Waldos by virtue of their chosen hangout spot, a wall outside the school.
Well, I'm talking about the origin of the stoner films, not like origin of 420.
Well, damn it.
Who gives a fuck?
It's all the smoke and haze, man.
Yeah, the cigar smoke. But I would say, you know,
I think it's important that people understand the origins. I just want to clear up the facts. I need people to get it right.
Well, I would say this genre of film, well, if you go back to like Woodstock in the 60s, the hippie era, you know, those people who were, you know, probably the beginning of like the major drug culture, you know, those people grew up. And then they were like, you know, actually
became
in a position
business owners and,
yeah,
you know, got professional jobs.
So
and,
like say 10 years later after Woodstock, you know, in the, instead of 68, like 78, that's when we start really seeing the first stoner comedies. And it's pretty much Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke is considered like the very first stoner comedy.
Yeah. And going back and watching these films, dude, like we talked about a little bit off the air, I had forgotten how big of a dickhead Tommy Chong was to Cheech all throughout these movies.
Oh yeah, they're like constantly fucking with each other, especially like, you know, you think Chong's like the hippie, but he's like really like just screws with Cheech the whole time.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, some of the precarious situations they get themselves into and everything else, I mean, these films were a blast to watch. In fact, we've got Cheech and Chong record over there that at some point I'm sure we're going to have to break out.
Oh, yeah. I haven't listened to that for a long time. I remember, like, Juice's dad had, like, one on, like, a jukebox or something in their house when we were in school. Let's do it. But, yeah, the, Up in Smoke, I mean, that movie was hilarious because it was, this kind of brings me to, like, you know, we mentioned that we think there's several different
I would classify this one, the first movie, as In Search of Said Drug.
Well, especially the classic era, because like I said, to me, there's like really three types. There's, like you said, the ones that were the people either looking for drugs or they have drugs, and
you know, others that you just want to watch and while on said drugs.
And then there's the ones, because those original ones I said that kind of fall into the Cheech and Chong category, didn't really have that much of a storyline to them. I mean, they were mostly just about, they were almost sketch comedies that were kind of hooked together with like a very loose plot. It was just all about the dumb shit they got into while they were doing drugs. I mean, especially, freaking Up in Smoke, their whole thing was like, we got to find weed. And they end up getting a job like transporting this truck that's made of weed. But they don't realize they're actually driving around in weed. They're still trying to find it throughout the movie, even though they have this truck.
And the fact that they're so clueless is what, you know, really sets the tone behind it.
And the truck is like starting to like catch on fire. So it's like getting everybody's. I remember the one scene where they get pulled over by the motorcycle cop and he comes up to the window to like give him a ticket.
Just the exhaust fumes alone.
Yeah. And then like completely forgets why he stopped him. He's like, can I have that hot dog, man? They're like, yeah. And then the drug dog goes and like tries to sniff the truck and dies from
just passes out. Yeah. You know, that or, you know, I think the scene before that, they were in the restroom or something and. Yeah, Tommy's using the pisser and, you know, just sits over there and just pisses all over the cop's leg.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and the guy that was always after him in those movies was Stacy Keach. That guy, because he played the main detective that was trying to catch him in that one. I think he was even in Nice Dreams as well. But yeah, he was a big part of that. And also Pee Wee Herman, Paul Reubens. Was always the cokehead in all those old Cheech and Chong movies.
You know, I didn't catch on to that. I didn't pay all
especially
that.
Especially in, because he pretty much shows up at least a cameo or something in like every movie. But he's all over, Nice Dreams, I think it is one where he's like, but yeah, he's always this like coked out character when you see him. It's like, you can't believe that he like eventually became a children's show star.
Yeah,
if you go back and watch all the old Cheech and Chong stuff.
I don't know. I think one of the things that really stands out for me is, you know, some of the license plates. In particular, one that we'll talk about off the air. Like I said, we're trying to keep this a little bit clean. So, but dude, that freaking large joint they smoked, that they called the Maui Wowie, and
he's like, oh yeah, because it's like the size of a freaking Moe's burrito.
Dude, that reminds me when we were looking at the Thompson Cigar Magazine, like that. 3-pack that comes with the massive cigar that spans across both
yeah,
pages.
And it's like actual size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think it's like how they meet in like Up in Smoke is like Cheech is like driving down the road and he sees this like hot girl in the rear view and he goes, pulls over and it's Chong. He's just like tied his shirt up to make it look like he has boobs so he can like attract a driver. But then he like offers him like the thing looks like the size of a freaking, Moe's burrito. I mean, it's huge. He's like, what is this, man? He's like, oh, it's Doberman, man. He's like, what? I've never heard of Doberman. He's like, yeah, my dog ate all my weeds. So I had to wait till he pooped it out. So basically just a giant rolled dog turd.
just the precarious things that happen. You know, one of the scenes that struck me is the freaking motorcycle, you know, on the other side of the kitchen that, you know, they're just freaking revving and everything else. Like, I mean, just straight up rocking it. Like, we talk about doing drunken karaoke, man. He was living the dream.
I mean, I think I learned my first Spanish language cuss word from watching Cheech and Chong. Because
they crash on.
Yes, in the second movie. I think it's Cheech and Chong's next movie. And I said some of these old movies like this had no plot other than just. I still don't know what the story of Cheech and Chong's next movie are. And like I said, it's like a series. It's like a series of like the sketches kind of pieced together because with like a very loose storyline. I don't know how many times I've seen that movie, and I'm like, I don't know what.
I mean,
the
it
point
was. I think
is.
It was basically how to self-sustain themselves off of their neighbors. I mean, that's what the overall premise. I mean, the movie cuts out with them trying to siphon gasoline out of the neighbor's car. Then, you know, they're freaking
and then,
carrying like Chong, I guess, 13 gallons of gas in that big freaking metal trash can that they try to use to fill up their car and end up freaking
and then Chong ends up going to hang out with Cheech's cousin, who's like a redneck, and it's just Cheech Marin dressed as a redneck named, I think he was named Red, and he supposedly had this like whole a whole field of pot, and they go to find it, and it's like aliens show up or something, and there's like fireworks. It gets like real fucking crazy. But yeah, that one scene where Cheech has his van with hydros on it, and they bounce so much they end up bouncing into like the neighbor's yard and taking out the fence. But Cheech told Chong earlier, he's like, "You want to learn some Spanish? Bendejo. That means my very good friend." Which, yeah, spoiler, that means like son of a bitch or something like that. So when these Mexican guys come out yelling at him, Chong's like, "Hey, bendejos, you're all bendejos." And it almost gets killed. It's hilarious.
Not very nice to crash the house party. I mean, that was just a Sunday lunch, people minding their own business, and next thing you know, you got a van crash through the fence and then drive through the other fence.
Well, you know how those two got together, don't you? Speaking of like Woodstock and stuff, Cheech was a draft dodger. He ran to Canada to avoid the draft, and ran into Chong, whose parents owned like a Chinese restaurant or a strip club or something or another. But yeah, Chong was like Canadian. And that's how they met. It's because Cheech like fled the U.S. and ended up hooking up with Chong up in Canada. And then they started doing like a comedy group at his parents' like club or restaurant or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the wars and everything else, I mean, that was huge. You know, that's getting more into the political side of things that we're going to stay away from. But yeah, I mean, it's just crazy to see, you know, some of the I guess, watching the 70s, 80s movies, and then you fast forward 20 years to some of the television sitcom stoner-esque TV shows like That 70s Show, and characters start reappearing with the same names, like Red and stuff like that. And, yeah. You're like,
and of course, you know, Chong was always on there. He
Yep. All the cameos.
What is the name of his character on That 70s Show or something? But basically, he was playing like classic 70s Chong. I mean, it was just...
He was being himself.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I'd seen him on some of the late night shows and stuff like that. I mean, dude, just hilarious.
Yeah, I saw recently because I got bored and I was there's nothing on. I started watching a bunch of old episodes of That 70s Show, and there was an episode where they hired Chong. He ran the like photo hut, so they hired him to be a photographer for like the Veterans Club. Because Red was fixing to get some kind of award because he was officially like somebody had died off, so now he was like the most decorated guy in the club. And when Chong shows up to because he thinks it's Chong some old hippie, when he shows up to take the photos, they're like, "Oh, dude, it's you know, this guy's a hero, he saved like all our ass in Vietnam and stuff." And they're like, "He's like, what, you were a soldier?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, man, I forgot about that."
Like, so burned out, doesn't even remember that facet of life.
And it like turns out he like got like a freaking Medal of Honor or something like that. He ended up saving like this whole like platoon and shit. And I think at the end of the episode, it shows like his origin story, how he became like, it shows him like getting out of the army, and he's like, you know, squared away soldier guy, and he's like looking for a ride home, and these dudes like roll up in this car, and there's like just smoke pouring out the windows, and they're like, "Hey man, we'll give you a ride." And then like, he's like, "That's the last thing I remember."
Nobody rides for free. We'll not repeat the rest of that bumper sticker.
I think everyone's dads from the 70s had that bumper sticker at one time or another.
Quite possibly.
Because they never really, you know what they're doing in That 70s Show, but they never really like flat out say it a lot of times. It's like, because you never actually see smoking anything.
Well, I think one of the dead giveaways is one of the episodes where they freaking climb the giant water tower. And they get the bright idea that they're going to spray paint a big cannabis leaf on the tower. Well, instead, it looks like it's somebody giving you the finger. Like they completely
it was on network TV, so they couldn't show like that. They always had that scene where they're sitting there around a table and the camera just kind of spins.
Yeah, everybody's eyes are hazy.
There's all this like huge smoke cloud and everybody's just being stupid. I
mean, dude. Kind of like us sitting in our basement right now.
Yes, if it's like cigar smoke. I was watching that the other day. They're all sitting there talking about like some of the discussing like life in general. And I'm like, you know, this could be us. Like, all we need is a GoPro in the middle of the table that we could spin as we're doing the podcast. And
yeah, I don't know. I think we'd be a little bit too square, you know. I mean, we'd have to
have a few drinks first.
Even then, both of our professional careers, we have to keep that in mind. So, I mean, we can't just cut loose. You know, these are people that were still in high school. They had their whole lives ahead of them. They had nothing to lose.
Yeah, plenty of times to make mistakes. Do you remember some other movies from that era? Because really, I would say the highlight of the stoner film was the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, we've recently, late 90s through today, have gotten what I consider the modern era of stoner films. But, I mean, we had back then you had, like, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Not too much for the you know, 70s and 80s. That was a little bit before my time. I mean,
well, yeah, there was, what, 4 Cheech and Chong movies? There was Up in Smoke, the next movie, and The Nice Dreams, too. That was the one I said that had a lot of Pee Wee Herman in it. And that one actually had a story. They were drug dealers that were selling drugs out of a ice cream van. But the drugs they got from some lab, so they were like actually turning people into lizards for some reason. Because I remember like the Stacey Keach.
Dude, you're starting to get some Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas shit.
Oh
right
yeah,
there.
Like Stacey Keach is a character who is the detective. After he ends up like smoking some of the confiscated weed, and he's like slowly turning into a lizard throughout the movie. Like, and by the end of it, he looks like a full on alligator in a Hawaiian shirt. He's got like a tail and everything. It's just messed up. But I remember what's his name? Paul Reubens steals all their money they made, and then finding him later, he's like an insane asylum, and then he's like, and like the only thing he always says is like, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry," and as soon as the doctor walks away, he's like, "I'm not sorry." It was just the weirdest thing. Oh, but yeah, like so that, you know, they did that, and then they tried to do like non-stoner movies, the Corsican Brothers, which was just, it was like kind of like a historical comedy. They were like. They were twin brothers separated at birth, and it was like this whole like Spanish Revolution type movie, and like we have one of them would get hurt, the other one would feel it. It was like just strange.
I think that was one of the movies I read about that was just like, yeah, avoid this at all cost.
Yeah, the Corsican Brothers is pretty bad. I mean, and then they did like what Things Are Tough All Over like later on. It was their kind of attempt to go back to that, and it just never really worked out, and they kind of broke up. For a long time, and then you know they've recently got back together, which they said they're going to do another movie, but they haven't really got around to it. They did do another comedy tour and did a if you want to watch it on Netflix, they have like the tour movie on Netflix of their modern tour. But then things kind of died out for a while, and then like,
yeah, I mean the early 90s, I mean I guess one of the next films that really stands out in my head, and I mean, Dazed and Confused, I always thought was a great movie, and it's, you know, kind of a little bit different category here. I mean, it's not necessarily...
We mentioned the classic era and how that style was. When we get to the more modern era, the movies tend to have an actual storyline and a plot, but they just have drug use in it. You know, it may not be the central part of the story, it just happens.
Yeah, I mean, everyday life. Yeah.
And Dazed and Confused, like I said, that you know, it was kind of a throwback to the 70s style. But
yeah, I mean,
it was
you know, basically still a great last movie. Day of high school set in the summer of 1976 was the plot. And
some of early Batflex, some of the first time we get to see Ben Affleck and what is it, Jeremy London, one of the London brothers. I can't remember. One of them's in that movie and the other one's in Mallrats, but they're twins. And I never can tell which one's which. But my favorite part of that movie is the cars. I mean, those 70s muscle cars and like 60s muscle cars was just...
Oh, yeah, dude. That was an era of car that, I mean, dude, I'm sorry. I watch even more modern movies like Fast and the Furious and everything, and I'm very much the Toretto old school muscle. You know, I can get away from the import style stuff. Give me something that I can still work on with a wrench without needing, you know, a freaking entire... computer outfit instead of actual tools in my garage.
And that's one of the things I kind of get off topic for a second. I liked about the later Fast and Furious movies, like the first ones, it was straight up the imports, and then but like as time went on, you got more and more of the good American muscle in those movies.
So I don't know, it was always funny to me, you notice Toretto always had the car that for some reason was doing wheel stands every time it would take off. Like I guess that was just his signature thing.
Yeah, so I don't know how many dodges he blew
now,
up.
I mean, much like our Stonerfield friends, we tend to jump around and can't stay on task and lose our focus.
But we
end,
have
we
no
make
excuse.
It come full circle.
We just get distracted easily. We're like ADD or something.
Dude,
we have
the
no
haze of the cigar smoke.
Yeah.
I mean the tobacco oils and everything else. I mean,
whatever, man. Another one I remember from that early modern age would is the Stone Age. That was one that I can barely remember the plot of. It's been so long that I've seen it, but I think it's like two guys trying to like just basically trying to get laid. I mean, that's the whole plot of the movie is them trying to like find some girls or something, and it's like two metalheads, and they for some reason they got this giant bottle of peppermint schnapps that they're always talking about. Because I just remember every time they're like someone like trying to get drunk, they're like, well, we got the schnapps, and then like ting, and it's like the sound effect every time he pulls out the big bottle.
Yeah, I've got some bad old school, you know, starting with one of my first bands I was playing with, and Peppermint Schnapps.
Oh, yeah, bad day.
Ruined them for the next day and a half.
When you puke, it tastes minty fresh.
Yeah, I don't know about that. And having to show back up at my buddy's parents' house and all of us puking all over the furniture and stuff did not go over too well either.
I just remember the guy getting sick in the movie and puking in somebody's couch and just putting the cushions back. And the whole conversation about, because that's one of the things, I think the first time I remember that Blue Ocean Cult Fear the Reaper song was like, the dude like loved it. And every time he kept trying to play it, the guy's like, quit listening to that pussy music. He's like, what? This is Blue Oyster Cult. He's like, yeah, every band makes at least one pussy song so they can get laid. This is their pussy song.
I don't know, man. Regardless of pussy or not, I'm saying that's a badass song. Like,
this is something I always remember, like, one of my favorite bands or some of my friends' bands. You get to the one love song, slow song. I'm like, oh, that's their song.
I can see my funeral is... You know, Highway to Hell and Don't Fear the Reaper back to back. I mean, that pretty much sums up my life right there.
Yeah, that is in my instructions upon my death. I'm like, someone must play that at my funeral, but don't tell anybody it's coming. I think it'll be one last hilarious joke. just to see the reaction of people. What the fuck? But, you know, also in that time, we had a lot of the hood movies that show up as stoner films, but I don't really consider those like stoner films. Like, you know, Don't Be a Menace to South Central, like kind of like I saw that on some. I'm like, I don't know if I'd like agree with.
No, I mean, I think there's that would fall maybe more into the category of somebody that is a recreational user, and you know,
well, there's definitely a lot of movies that have like explicit drug use in them, but I wouldn't consider them a stoner movie.
No, I mean, and another movie that you see along those lines, I would say, is Blow. And by and large, I absolutely love that movie.
Yeah, but that's more of a
awesome movie, but
like a true crime, you know, drama. It's definitely not what I would consider a stoner comedy. But
it's one of those movies that, once again, recreational people will say, yeah, this has got to be on. I mean, looking at some of the articles that we read doing our research and everything else with top 20, top 40 all-time movies, and it was, by and large, every comment was, hey, where is this movie, and...
Yeah, because if you're speaking about strictly the comedies, that one definitely doesn't fit in. One that I recently watched, too, that I think was kind of a... tried to throw back to that old school, like, it was Half-Baked. I mean, I watched, like I said, the late 90s, early 2000s. We got a bunch of those, like Half-Baked.
How High? Dude, Where's My Car?
Dude, Where's My Car? That's definitely a stoner movie. I mean, Super Troopers.
Yeah, Super Troopers.
We just talked about Super Troopers,
that
too.
That was another one that was overlooked on a lot of people's lists that, you know, folks were like, hey, this movie needs to be on there. Like, you know.
Yeah, I consider that one definitely one of the more modern modern movies. And what was it? Yeah, Half-Baked. I mean, that was like probably one of the first times I'd seen Chappelle. I mean, that might have been even before Chappelle's Show really got huge. That was when he was still kind of a small actor. But I mean, he blew up after that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, freaking Chappelle and his stuff, I mean, it was just freaking awesome. And like you said, I think that's what allowed him to branch out and basically, you know, shed some light and gain the traction and, you know, ultimately be able to come up and do his own original stuff.
And, yeah. And that's also one of the first times I saw Bob Saget, like, cussing in a movie.
Yeah. Like, well, it's weird watching Bob Saget go from America's Funniest Home Videos from back in the day.
Yeah, in Full House. But, you know. I mean, he was always, like, a dirty comedian, but, like, I had not really, you know, I grew up on him seeing him as, like, Danny Tanner, the quintessential, you know, Family Guy, you know, G-rated dude. And then, that, like, I think...
Yeah, his comedy is anything but
yeah,
that.
I think me and Mike saw Half-Baked in the theater when it came out. And it got to that point where Chappelle goes to rehab for weed, and all the, like, hardcore drug people are like, that's bullshit. You, like, marijuana's not even a drug. And Bob Saget's like, yeah, I've sucked dick for coke. Have you ever sucked dick for... I'm like, holy crap. Yeah. Danny Tanner just said something. It blew my mind. But I mean, and now, like I said, I've looked at some of his comedy stuff, and yeah, the dude's hilarious. But he's definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, it was
not just, the Family Guy. If that's the only thing you've ever seen him as, is like the cheesy Family Guy.
I remember, in fact, my parents renting a movie one time because it had Bob Saget, and they're like, "Oh, this will be great. We love Bob Saget." Blah blah blah. And like, there's one part where somebody just blows up a bathroom. Like, and, you know, he just comes out just. S-bomb every other word for like a minute straight, and my parents are like, all right, we're done here.
That's like what an Entourage. I mean, he was hilarious on that as like just kind of a coked out version of himself every time he guest starred on that. But yeah, what was the other one? If you look it up on, I'm sure it's on YouTube, Jamie Kennedy did a gangster rap with Saget called like Hanging with Saget or something. That's It's freaking Bob Saget being a gangster. It's freaking hilarious.
Definitely something we'll have to check out once we get off the air here. See, this is a problem with this episode. We're definitely going to fall down some holes afterwards.
Yeah, like I said, one of the ones you mentioned when we first started talking about New This was How High. I mean, that's probably one of the first Red Man, Method Man movies that I saw. And Method Man for a, you know, of course, of the Wu-Tang Clan, that's... He's actually turned out to be a pretty good actor. I mean, I've seen him in a lot of like TV shows and movies and stuff.
They make an awesome combo, and you know, just them doing their own side projects and stuff. I mean, they're both very, very talented guys, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've seen Method on like a bunch of episodes of CSI. He like always plays some like gangster dude on that. But I mean, he's been in several movies now, and I think that's probably one of the first ones I saw with him, especially doing a comedic role in that movie.
Dude, just. And I remember, I was probably, you know, in high school when that movie came out. And,
it came out in 2001.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was, what, probably like my freshman, maybe sophomore year, I was watching that movie and everything. And that was one of the ones that there wasn't a month that went by that you didn't at least watch that movie. Like, every different group of friends that you were hanging out with at some point, it was either that or Napoleon Dynamite. And Napoleon Dynamite was one of those films. It took me about six times before I could finally, you know,
I still can't sit there. I'm like, you either love that movie or you hate it. And I'm just like, that's fucking stupid.
After six times, somehow I fell in love with it. And now it's...
I just remember you running around the telling everybody to eat ham for like a fucking month, dude. And like, show them eat some ham, Tina.
I mean, I that's what's awesome about walking around the fairgrounds and stuff like that when, you know, they got the llamas and stuff out there. I mean,
just like, Tina the llama.
Oh, Tina, you fat lard.
One of the ones I completely forgot about too Friday, the Friday series.
Yes. Yeah, Friday is another classic.
I almost completely
forgot
about
Friday,
that. And next
Friday, for that matter. I mean,
Friday after next.
Yeah, Friday after next.
And that was one of the first probably like big Chris Tucker things too. And that's also when like we first started seeing, you know, Ice Cube now. If people don't know him from his like NWA days, they think he's like a family comedy guy. I mean, he's done all these like, you know, Are We There Yet? And like all these like family movies and like and comedies. He's like, I mean, this was like, you know, straight out of Compton.
Yeah. I mean, today back was in the day.
Yeah, I grew up on him as like, you know, hardcore gangster rapper. And now he's like, you know, this family guy in all these movies.
But, always ends up playing the cop or something
yeah,
else.
Like him and Ice-T both,
to make
man.
Up for, you know, those days. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, him and Ice-T both, while, you know, playing cops or what have you. But yeah, like I think Friday's like the first time you really saw, because he had done some acting before that, but it was always like, you know, dramas and stuff, or like, you know, like was some of those, like, you know, gangster movies. But yeah, I think it's the first time you ever seen him as, like, a comedian.
Damn. That was a movie that I should have went back and watched before we aired this episode.
Yeah, I literally completely forgot about Friday.
It's been a few years since I've seen it on my computer screen.
Yeah, it's whatever. Friday After Next was on TV the other day, but that's just not as good as, like, the original, like, two Friday movies. Like, Friday After Next, they're, like, security guards or something. it's just... No, but that first one and, whatever, John Witherspoon as his dad.
Yes.
Come in the bathroom. I smelled your shit for 23 years. You can smell mine in 5 minutes.
Oh, no bueno.
Yeah, that actor is always hilarious. I mean, I remember seeing him on, was it the Wayans Brothers show?
Yeah, I mean, that's another one that, I mean, I don't know. What would you not the Wayans Brothers. Who am I thinking? Oh, freaking Wayne's World. That's it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that may probably fall into that third category I thought about, is stuff that people that aren't really, there's not a lot of drug use. They're not what I would consider a stoner film, but it's something that when you see people posting lists of, like, you know, the stoner movies, that's kind of one that makes the list.
I don't know. There's one near and dear to my heart, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was so much the movies, but I can remember reading that book back in high school. And for some reason, I just fell in love with it. I don't know what it was, but.
Yeah, that, I mean, Johnny Depp is, but that movie is just hysterical. And I saw, well, I've seen a lot of references to that movie, but I remember, I've been watching a lot of that, how was it, Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations.
Yes.
And he did a Vegas episode, and he, like, got one of those cars just like they have in that movie, and he's, like, driving through the desert making all these Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas references.
Dude, I mean, I would say with the exception of the trunk full of, you know, contraband.
And today I saw...
the crazy attorney. Jeez, man. As your attorney, I have to advise you not to air this podcast. Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah, when we get into nerd news later, we'll talk a little bit about the Star Wars celebration. But I saw a photo that went up on Instagram where I guess they had a background of, like, Luke's speeder and stuff. You get your photo in front, and they had, like, the whole, like, Tatooine scene behind it.
Uh-huh.
And, Strangeway, of course, you know, has his picture in front of that, and the caption is like, "We can't stop here. It's Jawa country." Oh, but
I don't know. I mean, and I guess to continue up the spectrum, the next thing that comes to mind is Harold and Kumar.
Yeah, like the what I consider, like, the modern era where Harold and Kumar definitely. I mean, three.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's Harold and Kumar go to White Castle. There's Harold Escape from Guantanamo, and then there's, like, the Christmas.
Yeah, the 3D Christmas movie. Yeah, those are definitely, like, I kind of fall back to that, you know, the original, like, Cheech and Chong style, where that's definitely, you know, through the whole movie, they're trying to, they get stoned and they decide they want White Castle, and they can't eat anything until they get the White Castle, and then crap ensues.
Yes. I mean, it just turns into an epic. Yeah, I mean, dude, it's an epic. We'll leave it at that. I mean, it's.
I mean, this is the movie
of Lord of the Rings.
Oh man, I have not thought about it like that until. But that makes a lot of sense. It's an epic quest movie, but instead of knights and dwarves, it's two stoner guys.
There you go. See, I'm good for something. I mean, I've got this down pat.
And that movie kind of, you know, brought back the legend of Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes.
I mean, up into that, you know, he was Doogie, and then, you know, he had that part in Starship Troopers. But, yeah, he didn't really become, I think, like, super famous again until, like, Harold and Kumar. And then from that, you know, he got How I Met Your Mother and was on that for forever. And now he's, like, just straight up legendary. I mean... But seeing him is, like, the cracked out, like, whoring version of of Neil.
Damn, that's... And I was trying so desperately. You had texted me earlier and said that Comedy Central was doing, like, a stoner film, you know, kind of marathon today.
Yeah, that was one thing. I watched, was it Half-Baked, How High, and Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay, like, all played today while I was sitting around watching TV. And, yeah, especially the second one, too, with the Guantanamo Bay, where, like, Neil picks them up, and he's, like, just messed up out of his mind. He's like hallucinating and stuff. He takes him to the whorehouse and he ends up branding one of the hookers. Oh, and yeah. And then like you see him in the third one too. And they're like, because yeah, now it's like, yeah, everyone knows he's gay and stuff. And he's like, nah, man, that whole gay thing was just something that, like a cover so I could get chicks. Chicks love trying to turn a gay. I mean, he's.
I mean, dude, that's the quintessential, you know, version of, you know, people, you know, that do the whole Meryl cheerleading thing. I mean, a lot of people give him flack, but, I mean, you're in a prime position. I mean, you can't argue with the method.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about me, like, watching all those freaking Bring It On movies the other day. I was bored. There was nothing else on.
It's okay. We know why you're watching. We'll leave it at that.
Cheerleaders. I would say, yeah, what's Tenacious D in the Pick of Destiny?
Yes,
Like I said, he has that whole like fantasy sequence where he's like flying on Bigfoot's back and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's another one that I didn't see on anybody's list, and I can't really say it was a stoner film per se, but Beavis and Butthead Do America, you know, the yeah. The scene where they start tripping balls and they end up in hell, you know. After
yeah, they eat
their
the
and
they eat those like. Cactuses and it's like full of peyote or whatever. And I think that whole segment is even animated by Rob Zombie.
Yes,
it definitely looks like some of those early like White Zombie like album covers and stuff.
I mean, just the artwork and stuff in that is just absolutely fascinating. So I'm
yeah, that weird almost like claymation style.
I can remember convincing my grandma to rent that movie for me because I wasn't of age to rent. Or this is when there were actual brick and mortar VHS stores where you had to like go in and spend a couple bucks to rent VHS tapes. And
well, like so that, and also I remember in the Harold Kumar movies, he like Kumar always has those fantasy segments where he's like in a relationship with a giant bag of weed. Yes.
Oh. Oh yeah, there were all kinds of things done that we cannot describe.
Yeah. Somewhere. But, and whatever, Beavis and Butthead, that, like, we mentioned, that, like, so that's kind of what I consider the third genre of stoner movie that may not really show drug use in it, but it's something that, like...
It's definitely implied.
Like, Big Lebowski. Like, I didn't really think that was, like, a stoner movie. I mean, I know he smokes a lot in the movie, but, and he's definitely, like, a hippie guy, but that's one that made a lot of the, you know, top 10 stoner yes. films of all time. And I love the Big Lebowski. That's probably one of my favorite movies. The dude abides, man.
The dude abides, yes.
And the cowboy voiceover, like narration and stuff. I love that. I love that actor too. But yeah, I mean Big Lebowski, John Goodman, and what's the other guy's name? Steve Buscemi. that movie is just freaking Jeff Bridges, man. I mean that dude. You know, the dude is like, he's made like a lot of great. I mean, we may have to do a whole episode about Jeff Bridges movies at some point. Talk about Tron and
yes,
Big Lebowski and everything else. Well,
I mean, hell, even Billy Madison, you
yeah,
know,
yeah, definitely the especially like the earlier Adam Sandler movies would definitely fall into that category.
And you know, I guess switching gears, I mean, I maybe on a genre of their own, but you're seeing a lot of, you know, documentaries and stuff like that, and which, you know, some of these are kind of political, but I mean the Super How Me directed by Michael Bidlin.
Oh yeah, with
was,
Doug Benson, that yep,
you know, was actually pretty entertaining to watch.
Yeah, Doug Benson is hilarious. He even does a comedy show. It's called, well, he does like Movie Interruption, where they just like, they basically, it's like a live version of Mystery Science Theater 3000, where they just yeah, make fun of, watch a movie and make fun of it. But he's got another one called, I think it's like Getting Doug with High. It's like another one of his like usual, his comedy shows he does. But yeah, that guy's like the quintessential stoner dude now. But yeah, that Super High Me, where he spent like 30 days completely sober and then 30 days like smoking weed like every day and to see if it had any
yeah,
kind
just
of
documenting, you know, the IQ. Like, yeah. And I don't know, the results of that were pretty substantial in my opinion, but. That's my opinion.
I mean, it's
you know, and I guess we should throw it out there. I mean, there's a lot of Kevin Smith films that made everybody's list, but I think later on we're going to try to, you know, specifically talk
yeah,
about.
I got that kind of follows into something else I was with him. But
Grandma's Boy.
Yeah. That and anything pretty much that has Danny McBride in it. Pineapple Express.
Yep. From 2008.
Pretty much everything that's made by either Seth Rogen or what's his partner's name that's in Pineapple Express with him.
Oh, shit. It's not David Green, is it?
No. No,
that's the director.
Shit, I know. I'm. I don't know. Google that. To the Googles, Brad. But anyway, like I said,
James Franco?
Yeah, Franco.
Yep.
Yeah, those two together are like, I mean, you've got Pineapple Express, Your Highness, The Interview that just came out. I mean, I would kind of almost consider all those like modern era stoner films. Even, how was it? I'm blanking on it now, but the first big Seth Rogen movie where we had McLovin and stuff.
Oh, shit. That was, Oh, what the fuck? What?
Google that too.
McLovin.
Yeah, especially Pineapple Express, because Pineapple Express is just
super bad.
Yeah, super bad. How the hell could I? Yeah, I just remember spray painting.
Dude, we even had a refrigerator that we spray painted in tribute to that movie.
And... yeah, it's just been a while since I've watched that. But yeah, that. Those are definitely, I would say, examples of the modern era stoner film. Another thing is that there's definitely movies, TV shows, whatnot, that has like a quintessential stoner. If it's not a stoner film, especially movies where you have like a group of people, there's always like one idiot sidekick that is the quintessential stoner. That it, like it, there's like I said, for example, Scooby Doo. Shaggy is that group stoner.
So I had a philosophy sitting around late night with a group of buddies in a past life. So we were trying to come up with, how did Scooby-Doo get its title? So what we were thinking is the creators were sitting around, and, you know, late night, they're like, man, we need to get some creative energy going or whatever. So they decide to roll up a little something-something. And, you know, so they roll a doobie, and basically, you know, like, all right, we can call it Doobie Doo. No, man, it, that can't work. I got it. Scooby Doobie. No. How about Scooby Doo?
Like, that's a perfect example of, like, every movie that has a group of people, there's always the one idiot.
Definitely.
I mean, you had the preppy guy, the cheerleader, the nerd, and then the burnout stoner guy and his dog.
Well, I mean, dude, it went hand in hand, right? I mean, you had
even
all
Days
of these,
and Confused
you
had
all of these, you know, freaking mass characters, so they're always, you know, seeing shit, you know, that really isn't what it things aren't.
There
what
was no monsters; they were just all tripping.
Yep. They've, you know, freaking got the munchies.
I mean, they're even driving. The Mystery Machine is a straight up hippie van.
Yes.
But you also, Dazed and Infused, they had that one, like, long haired, like, kind of hippie stoner guy.
Yep.
Horror movies, especially. I mean,
Cabin
in the Woods. I mean, the guy with his MacGyver bong that turned into a coffee pot.
And I don't know if you could call it scary, but a parody of a horror movie. Scary movie itself.
Yeah. Was it? There's also whatever Freddy versus Jason. There was that guy. I think they called him. He looked just like Jay Muse from the Kevin Smith movies.
I mean, dude, you could probably go back through any of the Friday the 13th movies and find illicit drug use and seeing somebody.
Yeah,
get
there's always at least like
thereafter.
You know one guy that is the stoner guy in just about every like horror movie or comedy movie. Well, even you know, briefly speaking about Kevin Smith, you know, Jay and Bob and is like the stoner sidekick of every movie. Which, I don't know, they're more the dealers in there than they are, because Jay's a little bit aggressive to be a stoner.
Jay's a little aggressive, but, you know, Muse on the other hand. Muse is like, I love everybody. I will hook you all up. I don't care.
And what's funny is Kevin Smith wasn't
even
like...
I
want to
make friends, not money.
Kevin wasn't even like a stoner back then. He didn't become a stoner until Zack and Mary Make It Porno. That's when he really started smoking. And then we get movies like Tusk and Red State and stuff.
Opposite ends of the
spectrum. The dude went dark when he started doing drugs.
Yeah, I don't know if we can contribute that to cannabis or not. I mean, I don't know. We'll have to do... I'm sure there's some scientific studies out there that...
I don't know. A movie like Tusk, you have to be on something to just come up with an idea and think it's like a good idea.
I would like to think that you would have a more positive experience, but That's not my idea of fun under the sun, by no means.
Yeah, let's make Canadian horror movies, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, as fellow podcasters, we shall never go to Canada.
Just don't go full walrus.
You can never turn back. Oh. All right, got to get that Envision out of my head.
But Pineapple Express, I think, is like the quintessential modern movie, because I mean that one
and talking about it, Pineapple Express for me is like Napoleon Dynamite is to you. Like, it's really hard for me to get behind Pineapple Express for some reason.
The whole interaction with Franco and Danny McBride as his like supplier is just Danny McBride is he's probably one of my favorite comedy actors nowadays. I mean, just about everything he's in is just weird. Like, I watched the Foot Fist Way the other day. I'd never seen that before, but he's like some kind of like small town like karate instructor, and he's trying to like get, you know, like kind of respect for his school, and he goes and tries to get like some like famous dude who's kind of like Chuck Norris to judge like the school's like first black belt test or whatever, and he is just so like just weird as shit in that movie.
Good times. I don't know. Do we want to go back in time with, you know, some of the propaganda films that now people would say would fall under the comedy category and stuff? I mean,
well, yeah, that's kind of like Reefer Madness is nowadays considered a comedy.
Yeah, well, you know, it's crazy. I went and, you know, watched it with Rachel. She had never seen it up until
what was that, 50s?
A couple of months. Nah, dude, that shit was like freaking
50s, 60s, something like that.
Like 1936, really? 1939. Yeah, I mean, that's
damn,
like...
Damn, that is old.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, because that one is like this over the top. Like, if you do drugs, you're going to become like a homicidal maniac. And some of those old propaganda films. I've seen like, I think there's one on drinking and driving we watched at school called like Blood on the Highway. That is just over the top. Like, if you do drugs or drink, you're going to like... You know, it shows like horrific accidents and stuff. And it's just... So, like, you know, don't do anything and you're going to die type movies.
Don't speed. Don't blink. Don't take your hand off the wheel to hold your girlfriend's hand.
Yeah. But, yeah, those movies now, you watch them and they're absolutely – they were definitely not intended to be comedies.
I mean, it was,
but,
you know, coming out of the era of, you know, alcohol prohibition and everything else. I mean, you know, it was hardcore stuff back then. And, I mean, you know, and – you know, even nowadays, I mean, my parents are still of that same, you know, philosophy and stuff like that, that, you know, this is the root of all evil, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, I think some people are naturally just bad, and other people, regardless of what they do in their own personal free time, are still pretty good stand-up, you know, citizens at the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned it briefly, but Grandma's Boy. Yes. That one is one that I love that movie, especially, and I can't remember her name, but she played Thelma in the Scooby-Doo movies. She is like super hot when you see her, not like like this, there was some great special effects on Scooby-Doo to make that girl look nerdy, because she was like super hot in Grandma's Boy.
I don't know, when Scooby-Doo did the live action movie, they kind of killed it for me introducing Scrappy. I could never get behind Scrappy for some reason.
Just to him being the bad guy was yes. Like cracked me up so bad. But yeah, Grandma's Boy, especially when the, because that, I mean, that kind of hit on everything, because the guy is a video game tester, and so I mean it hit like all my nerd yeah. Desires on that one. And when the old ladies,
nerdgasm alert,
yeah, when the old ladies find his like stash in like a teapot, and they think it's tea, and make like and Grandma and all of them,
I mean,
get like
but now
stoned.
Look at it, dude. I mean, in my own office, they have herbal tea. So I mean, hey, it's a thing.
Yeah, but them just like for some reason, old people getting high is just hilarious for some reason.
Dude, have you seen the old people that get high and yes. Play Cards Against Humanity?
It was a BuzzFeed video, I think. I saw it on like E-Bombs World or something. But they had these like three grandmas, and got them like stoned and had them play like games and stuff. And at one point, they even play Cards Against Humanity, and it's hysterical. I definitely suggest you look that one up on YouTube, because it is just the funniest damn thing watching these grandmas just...
And, dude, they have no shame.
Yeah, they are coming up with the dirtiest answers. And so, and sometimes there's like some that are like super dirty, and one of them's like, what does that mean? And they had to like look it up and explain it to like the third grandma of like, you know, what she's talking about.
I mean, that's one good thing I like about Cards Against Humanity. I mean, if there's stuff you don't know, it's going to have you Googling some crazy shiitake.
That's how I found out what Huddus and Tuddus was. Playing cards. Like, what? We got to Google that, figure out what that's a reference to.
Or somebody having to Google seppuku.
Yeah, seppuku. Yeah, there's no, yeah, we definitely have Google open when you're playing some of those deep cut Cards Against Humanity cards. And that too, and then one part, I think they pulled out a vaporizer or whatever, and it was just vaguely, it was like a big black, vaguely penile looking device. And the grandma's like, I don't know what this is, but I kind of want to take it home with me. I was like, no, I don't want to hear that from my grandmother.
Oh, it's all bad. You ruined it.
Oh, something I forgot. Tommy Chong's in Half Baked as the Squirrel Master.
Squirrel Master?
Because like the whole plot of that movie is that their buddy gets... he goes on a munchies run and accidentally like feeds this police horse who dies because it's like diabetic or something. So he goes to prison and they start selling drugs to be able to bond their buddy out of like prison, and then bad shit ensues. To keep him from getting raped in prison, he makes friends with Tommy Chong, who is like the squirrel master. He's like this kung fu master who has like a pet squirrel.
I don't know, man. I want to master the squirrel beer. That's the only thing a squirrel and master I want to try to accomplish.
What is the name of that beer anyway? I forget. But there's a beer. So I think it's like the current like world record for strongest beer, but it's served inside a taxidermied squirrel. Like the bottle is wrapped in a squirrel.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a $750 bottle. Let's see. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
But yeah, that's another thing, too, I liked about Half-Baked, too, was the fact that it... You know, they kind of had these like short skits where they're like, you know, we sell to these different people, and they're going through like the different style of stoners. There was like the person who thinks they have to be do on drugs to be creative, and it's like this writer chick, and then there's like the old school smoker, and it's Willie Nelson, and then there's there's like the guy that always like, you know, doesn't have any money but smokes all your stuff, and it's like Snoop Dogg. there's so many of these weird little skits.
And it's the personalities and everything that truly make those movies for me, I think. I don't know, talking about Willie Nelson, I mean, you know, one area is just how much musical influence has, yeah. You know. I mean, you've had Willie Nelson, I mean, MC yeah. Chris, I mean, a lot of your old school, you know, political 70s rock bands and stuff like that. I mean, you know, talking about, I guess, a unique perception is Dark Side of the Rainbow, you know, mashing Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon with the Wizard of Oz and stuff. And, dude, you know, doing that shit just completely sober.
I mean, I did that as a kid. I was like, what? That works? And I think my uncle showed me that, and I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah. Like it's scary how mash up and stuff, and I don't know. I still want to try the whole deprivation take thing that, you know, Seth Rogen you know, mentions and stuff, just to see what's really going on inside of my brain. Although I don't know, I'm kind of scared.
I don't know if I want to be alone in my thoughts. Well, as we're kind of wrapping up here, what do you think about this week's cigar?
The cigar here, absolutely, you know, delicious in my opinion. I don't have anything bad to say about the construction, the strength, or anything else. You know, I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's definitely a good full-bodied cigar, but it wasn't like just overpowering to me. It was definitely a nice like strong, full-flavored cigar.
I mean, you definitely got the full flavor, but it wasn't so over the top that you were like, "Oh my god, it's not a DL 700." That cigar is one that you're like, all right, it's been 2 hours and I'm still smoking this thing.
Oh no, that's the one above the Digger.
Yeah,
which is like basically like a double the size of a DL 700. And like, I smoked one of those the other day at the cigar shop, and it was like 2 hours. You're like I think I texted you when I started, and you showed up like an hour and a half later, and I'm still got like 3/4 of a cigar to go.
I mean, that's one your lungs and everything truly hurt afterwards. This is something you can sit for an hour, really enjoy it, and I don't know. It was awesome coming home to after a stressful day, and you know, really relaxing too. So definitely what I needed.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we're about to wrap it up. Any final thoughts you have on Stoner films or whatever? Anything you think we've missed we need to mention before we get out of here?
I mean, nothing I can really think of. I mean, I think we pretty well covered the basics. I mean, I'm sure people could critique and say, "Oh my God, guys, you left this, and this out." But you know, send us some hate mail or something.
Feel free to tweet us, email us, whatnot. You know, maybe we'll mention it on the next show. Especially, also always taking your beer and cigar reviews. You can send us those, and maybe we'll try it on the show. With that, I think we'll be right back with some Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with me.
Who?
Dave, man. Open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave. Come on, man. Open up. I think the cops
saw me. Dave's not here.
No, man. I'm Dave, man. Hey, come on, man.
Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with
Who?
Me. Dave, man, open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave.
Dave's not here.
No, man. I am Dave, man. Will you come on? Open up the door, will you? I got the stuff with me. I think the cops saw
Who
me.
Who is it?
Oh, what the hell is it? Man, open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E. Will you open up the goddamn
Dave?
Door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
Hey, man. It's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And we're back. It's time for some Beer 30.
Yeah, we got a delicious beer on tap for you guys today.
That we probably cannot pronounce the name properly.
I mean, I'm going to go with just Korsendonk.
That's the way it looks to me. It is a Belgian double, Petter double ale. Someone actually gave me this. Hutch gave me this for my birthday party, so we decided to save it for our Beer 30 segment, since it's a damn good beer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is brewed with roasted malt. You know, it's got a deep, dark, reddish color. In the mouth, though, it's quite light tasting.
Yeah, for a dark looking beer, it's not very heavy. I mean, you could drink these all day.
I don't know about all day, but I mean, they're not super high gravity. I mean, this is what comes in at like 6.5% ABV.
6.5.
This damn complex as far as the taste goes. I mean, there for a while on the cooler end. This is one of the beers that we talk about that actually gives you the recommended serving temperature. And I think on this one, it was what, 45 to 55?
45 to 55. And this one can actually be aged. Is it, you know, it will, you can bottle condition this beer and, you know, it'll, like I said, and actually if this is something you want to buy and, you know, save for a while, it just says kind of store it and serve it at, you know, between 45 and 55. According to the bottle, it's a Petter Double Ale, a dark, robust Abbey beer brewed by master craftsmen in the classic Belgian double style. Rich and malty, with notes of port, raisins, and black chocolate on the palate.
I don't know, man.
A yeasty and fruity and slightly smoky bouquet.
I mean, I'm getting a lot more floral out of this beer right now. I mean, there were a couple of sips, and I thought I was, you know, drinking straight up some wildflower beer or something. Like, I mean, the taste was awesome. I mean, it pairs, you know, we've got a very complex cigar, a complex beer, and all the flavors, you know, are mashing together quite well. There's no, you know, conflicts or anything, so.
Yeah, and this beer was named after the Krossendonk monastery, because I mean a lot of these Belgian beers are, like I said, brewed in the old monastery style, or even, you know, still brewed by monks in some cases. So yeah, it's definitely just a damn good beer.
Yeah, I mean, this is one, like you said, that, I mean, this would be a good go-to. I don't know exactly what the price range is on this, but I don't know. The way that the cork was sealed and everything, I'd never seen a cork that was, you know, freaking cut out and sealed the way this one was. Like, it was very intimidating opening because, I mean...
Yeah, we expected some blowback. We, like, needed to put on the safety glasses because not only was it corked, it had, like a metal wire ring, almost like a champagne bottle. And the cork was, like, pressing into the ring, so it looked like it had some some back pressure on it.
Yeah, but, I mean, the presentation and everything. And I guess if I were going to age this, I would, you know, essentially try to do it in a wine rack or something. You know, keep it out of the light. Like
a cellar or something if you had one, or just kind of somewhere dark and the temperature doesn't get, you know, too hot or too cold.
Have you heard... you know, people aging stuff, they always say to lay the bottle on the side so that way the cork doesn't dry out and your, you know, alcohol end up actually tasting like the cellar or the basement, whatever you're aging it in. Have you heard that by anybody?
I've not really heard it, but I mean, that's pretty much the way you see, like, you go, like, in Tim's wine cellar, everything's, like, you know, laying on its side. So I think yeah, that is. I think it's just keeping that, because if the cork dries out, then it kind of loses the seal. And, you know, lets, you know, air and stuff in, and which will, you know, ruin your beer, wine, whatever. So, yeah, I think having that wet cork is supposedly important.
Yeah, speaking of aged beer, I mean, we've got a beer that we need to do at some point that I've been aging now for about three and a half years. So,
oh, hell.
We'll have to tap into that sometime. But, you know, overall, I got to say, phenomenal job, Hutch. Awesome recommendation here.
That reminds me, did you ever find that other bottle of Guinness?
It has not left the cabinet.
Okay. We keep forgetting to drink that second bottle of the special Guinness, so...
it's there waiting for a good time.
We'll find a reason at some point. All right, well, I think that's about all we can say about this beer. We'll be right back with some science.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And welcome back. It's time for some science. You ready to learn some shit, Brad?
Oh, hell yeah, man. Let's just get the show on the road.
All right. What's one of the worst, like, things about drinking beer? We know hundreds of good things. What's, like, the one, like, you know, bad thing?
I mean, the only thing I can think of is being 90 degrees, dead heat in the middle of a festival, surrounded by 10,000 of your closest friends, being dehydrated as fuck and having to piss.
Exactly. Or, in some cases, hangovers, which... The hangovers is caused by dehydration. Well, group of scientists in Australia, which we all know that, you know, Australia is likes to drink. Griffith University
in
Queensland.
Are we gonna put a plug for Foster's here?
Or? Foster's Australian for beer. But it didn't say if this was from the Foster's company or not. But yeah, a group of Australian scientists at Griffith University in Queensland has come up with a beer that actually hydrates you. They've figured out a way to add electrolytes to the beer without actually affecting the taste.
That is interesting. Now, this is some science I can get my head around.
Yeah, I mean, they have like a regular and a light beer, and, you know, they did tests on, they, you know, got a group of people to do some kind of physical exercise and get all dehydrated, and instead of giving them Gatorade or whatever, they gave them, you know, Beer Aid, and it actually hydrated them like they're supposed to. So, I mean, of course, you're not gonna be going to the gym and like having one of these after you're done like running a mile, but, you know, it would actually, if you had a few of these in with you, like, you know, your drinking of the night, it could probably prevent you from having a super bad hangover the next day.
I mean, I would say anything just to keep, you know, the fluid levels and everything else in the body. I mean, you got a lot of fluids coming out, got to put something back in. So yeah, I can see where science is going with this. Juice, this may be the product for you.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's, I don't know. Drink premium stuff, I rarely get a hangover anymore. But, you know, this might be good for the...
But, you know, then again, I think about it, and a lot of times now, we drink a lot of beer, but we're drinking a lot of beer in moderation these days.
We're getting old, man. We're not high school kids drinking like a 40 pack of Bud Light or whatever on the weekend.
No, now it's Killer Bomber to get a buzz, eat some food, and, you know, smoke another cigar and call it a night.
Yeah, pretty much.
Damn, are we really that boring?
Yeah, we're getting old, man.
All right, it's official, we're old.
Another thing that, speaking of, you know, what you do when you're drinking, there's a new study that say video games actually make you a better learner, or better visual learner.
I mean, I can see that, you know. I mean, I've played a lot of video games in my day, and looking at some of my non-gamer coworkers and things of that nature, I'm, you know, reading comprehension and, you know, visualization just does not come as easy to some folks as I think it does for me.
Well, one of the things is with, and this was something the Journal of Plus One, I haven't heard of that particular journal. Basically, people who play a lot of video games pick up stuff visually a lot easier than your average person. And in fact, on most studies on visual learning, they exclude video game players because they skew the test results because it's you're not fair to the other people in the test. And one of the things that they found in this test is like when you have like two different tasks, when you learn like one task and all of a sudden you switch to another task without giving the brain time to catch up, usually if they pick up that second task, they actually lose skills on that first task, or they don't pick up that second task as well as the first one because their brain can't adjust from the one to the other that quickly.
Well, I mean, I think it goes back to the premise, and I may have used this analogy before, but you know, you've got a big test coming up. Well, if you study 2 weeks prior to that test, chances are you're going to do a lot better than if you try to cram 3 hours before the test.
But in the study, the video game players actually picked up both tasks better. Like I said, there wasn't a drop-off when they switched to another task. They still had learned both tasks.
No, you don't skip a beat.
You know, better. I mean, that's when you're playing games. You're used to having to switch between multiple things. You're working on one puzzle, and oh, no, I got to go fight this guy. And it's kind of...
Damn,
you know,
it, I can't have my pistol and my flashlight both. What a quandarum.
Yeah, so, I mean, it kind of, you know, trains your brain for multitasking.
Yeah, I mean, hell, I'm in agreement with that theory and everything else, so... Yay, science! And I like the Legend of Zelda from the article, too. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Taking me back to the Nintendo 64 that's sitting over there in the corner.
Speaking of which, that 8-bit or whatever, original Nintendo flasks that we found, I have to buy one of those.
Yeah, but did you see the drunken twist of the titles?
Yeah, there was we found this thing. I don't even remember what website it was, but they looked like old NES controllers, but they're actually flasks. And it was like a Duck Hunt one, but it was called Drunk Hunt. And there was like, I forgot what the Legend of Zelda knockoff was called, but they were just, it looked enough like the game at a distance you would think it was until you actually read what the title of it was. I think it was like Super like Smashed Brothers or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was Super Smash Brothers. I don't know. I'm with, you know, Hutch and his comment, though, that I'm going to have to wait for the 64-bit version.
I don't know, the 64 was, like, you know, smaller.
Oh, I'm not talking controller size.
The 64-ounce, like... No, get one that's actually the size of the Nintendo itself, not the game cartridge, like the box.
Damn, that'd be like some... What was the biggest game console? I'm trying to think. Like, maybe the Commodore, or...
I don't know, like, original Xbox was pretty damn big.
I don't know. I mean, I would say, well, I've got it in the collector case and everything, but the Atari is...
Yeah. Back to the lecture at hand. I'm not going to say it's aliens, but scientists think it might be aliens. Apparently, we've been getting these fast burst radio signals since, like, 2007, and some new studies on it, especially from the Institute of Data Analysis, have found like a pattern to these signals that we're getting. So they don't know, like normally the way they read it is like, so we receive a high frequency stuff. We'll get here faster than low frequency. So they kind of measure the distance between the high frequency and when the low frequency stuff arrives. Well, with this signal we've been getting, now that they're looking at it kind of differently, the distance between the high and the low is always the same. It's always like a multiple of a certain, like I think like 1.875 or something like that. But normally,
1.87, that's not good, man. Aliens about to wipe our ass out.
But you know, normally, like the low end stuff will get kind of like blocked by space debris, radiation, or whatever. So that stuff is usually never a constant number. But with this signal that we're getting, it's, you know, it's exactly pretty much the same every time, which is technically, we've never seen that before. So they're saying, you know, it may be some kind of yet undiscovered 187.5 is the pulses always come in multiples of that. So it's like they're like, it could be
like an, you know, astrophysical phenomenon and yes, perfectly normal, but
some kind of new physics that we've not seen anywhere yet. So it's, you know, we've never observed this behavior before, or it could be like, you know, an Earth signal that's just happened to get bounced off or something. But if they can eliminate the, you know, the supposed undiscovered explanation of it so far, then the only other explanation would be it's aliens.
I mean, I'm okay with alien theory. I mean, I think it's naive of us to assume we're the only intelligent species out there. So, yeah, on to the next one.
I mean, yeah, it could be like, you know, I mean, we've sent out messages and stuff trying to get people to
attend. It could be something, you know, just underground that we've forgotten about that somehow emitting, you know, some kind of frequency. So
this, you know, could be some alien race. I mean, like, it's kind of like their knock-knock, like, dudes, hello, anybody out there? Yeah, and just sending out the... But, you know, to this point, we don't know how to call them back.
They don't want to discover us. We're the ultimate virus.
What the fuck, dude?
We're worried about being invaded by aliens, and here we are. You know, we've had this beautiful planet, and the human virus has taken over to destroy it all. Yep. I just went there. I see the look on your face and the absolute disgust. Admit it, my friend. You've just been mindfucked.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
All right, so now that you're all depressed, I think it's appropriate that we move on to some form of something.
Another thing. Switch articles here. Ghost faces appear in medieval Black Book of Carmathian.
What?
Yep. I mean, that sounds like some shit from Ghostbusters. Was it the guy from Ghostbusters 2, Viggo the Carpathian?
Yeah. What? Dude, this thing was written in 1250. It's the oldest remaining medieval manuscript written solely in Welsh.
Yeah, apparently this book, you know, also contains like some of the earliest references to, you know, old hero tales like, you know, King Arthur and Merlin and... Some of the, like the oldest poetry that have known. Well, apparently, new recent studies with, you know, new visual scanning techniques and stuff, they're finding that there was actual, like, basically graffiti in the margins of the book that were erased probably back in the 1600s when this collector, Jasper Griffith, got a hold of the book in the 1600s. So, you know, it was already a 400-year-old book back then. And, you know, this guy kind of tried to preserve it by erasing all the scribbling in the margins. And they're finding, like, drawings of, you know, new poetry that's never been released anywhere else and stuff. So they're finding a lot of extras. I mean, everyone here was in school at one point, and I'm sure you scribbled in the margins of your book and bored in class.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was part of the fun of, you know, getting new textbooks and stuff like that to see what, you know, the previous, you know, students had.
So basically our great ancestors have did the same thing that we've all done. And now they're like I said, this once pristine book they find is was actually, you know, cleaned up at one point with all kind of like, you know, like, undiscovered poems and drawings and
dude, I just wonder, you know, how invaluable this book is, like if it could truly be translated and everything else. I mean, dude, it's something that I wish we could have an English translation for and, you know, actually be able to go and look at transcripts of.
Well, I mean, Welsh isn't that difficult to translate. It's not like Latin or something. So yeah, I'm sure that you could. Like,
I don't know. I'm getting pretty good on my Latin with tarantula terms. So
yeah, I mean, you could probably just Google translate that shit and read it if you want to go all the way to
to Wells.
I don't know, man. Google Translate's gotten me in trouble in a time or two, so I try to avoid it. It's not exactly foolproof.
But apparently, it's like I said, it's they refer to this book as the Black Book of Carmathan, and apparently it's like printed on like animal skin, and you know, it's actually like, I mean, from the picture, it kind of looks like a weird like version of the Necronomicon or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what came to mind when you know, you started talking about the Black Book and everything else, and I'm like,
inked in blood and bound in flesh.
I'm not going to mention the book. You can say the title. I cannot.
One last thing that I came across today that kind of really interested me. Have you ever heard of ayahuasca?
Not until we started talking about it today.
Well, I've listened to some. It's basically a plant medicine that you can go to like South American countries like Peru and Brazil and stuff and go on these spirit quests or whatever where you take this stuff in like a group with a shaman or whatever and basically you trip balls and go on like a spirit quest, and supposedly that's, you know, it's like a natural medicine and very good for healing. People have been documenting, you know, very positive results for a long time, and I've recently been heard somebody talking about it. I've been reading up on it, but now apparently scientists are actually investigating it as like an actual treatment for depression. The University of Sao Paulo, Brazil, has been doing some tests on this, on, you know, the actual ayahuasca, and they found that it had, you know, almost had like, you know, instantaneous, you know, relief of depression symptoms, and even several weeks to a month later, people were still better than they were before they took the
You know, looking here, you know, not only depression, but also, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder and stuff like that. So, I wonder if there's a temporary release of, you know, chemicals in the brain, or if, you know, this plant, you know.
I'd say it definitely affects your, like, serotonin levels and stuff like that. But from the people that I've, like, heard, you know, stories from that have, you know, gone and took the journey, I mean, they say it's a completely life-changing event. And
so here's what we do. We go get some ayahuasca, and then we go to the sensory deprivation tank.
Oh, God.
And, you know, dude, once we finish those two spirit quests, like, we're going to be renowned.
We're going to be like freaking Jedi Masters. I mean, is what's going to happen. And like, we'll be able to, like, you know, control stuff with our brains if we do both those together. I mean, if you really want to.
I mean, we could translate our podcast as using our thoughts.
Yeah, I'm going to recommend, if you look up Kevin Pereira's Pointless Podcast, he did an episode where he actually went on one of these ayahuasca journeys and went through the whole thing. And like I said, he does like an hour-long podcast talking about what he experienced during this trip. And like I said, it sounds amazing. It's like, you know, may have to go on a Peruvian vacation and try it out. But it might make me sane, and then I wouldn't have anything to talk about on the podcast because I'd no longer be crazy.
I don't think that's true at all. I mean, it could unlock your inner craziness, so it could take you to a whole nother level that
get, like,
you didn't even know existed. I mean, it's, you know, almost like reincarnation.
I come back full ninja. All right, I think that about wraps us up. We'll be right back with some nerd news.
Stay tuned.
Hello, Marvel Universe. The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah.
So, I got to ask you, Joe, why did Star Wars Episode 4, 5, and 6 come before 1, 2, and 3?
Why?
Because in charge of scheduling, Yoda was.
Oh, dude.
Thank you. We'll be here all night.
That's so bad. It's almost good.
So, yeah.
I think Norm told me one the other night. I can't remember what it was, but it was one of those that was just so stupid. I was like, "That it's funny because it's just It's so stupid. And that joke kind of falls into that category.
But you know it's true. So with no further ado, I mean, dude, as of today and, you know, throughout the freaking Star Wars, you know, convention and everything, I mean, we're just going to have to sum everything up because...
Well, this last
Star
week,
Wars is going to consume most of this segment.
If you didn't know, this last week was the annual Star Wars celebration, and this year it was in Anaheim, California. So a ton of news has like come out about it, and I've been so jealous because our buddy Strangeway has been there, and his Instagram feed has been just loaded with awesome. I even called him the night. I was like, "Fuck you, dude," because you're making me jealous. So you need to like cut the shit out. I'm tired of looking at the badass stuff you're seeing there.
Not only that, but the, you know, the people that were there, I mean, you know, all the sign materials and everything. I mean,
yeah, he met freaking... the actual Boba Fett. Between his feed and like the 501st guys I follow, I'm like, God damn it. I want to be there so bad. I got to save up money and go next year. It's probably, I think next year it's in Florida, so maybe I can afford to go to that.
You know, we're pretty much going to have to come up with a yearly con budget, and I think it's going to consist of, like, you know, the Steampunk Symposium, Dragon Con, and, you know, Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah. If anybody want to donate to our Star Wars fund, you know, click the button on the website. Yeah, if you feel like paying for our trip to Celebration. I got to finish my armor before then. But probably the biggest thing that dropped this weekend was our second trailer for The Force Unleashed.
Yes, and dude, I gotta say, it was badass. And I'm glad we got to see Han.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing I didn't like about the first one, because it really showed nothing, and it just showed, like, the new characters. And this one, like, you know, we finally at least get to see Han. And then you hear Luke voiceover stuff, and, well... You see one image of a guy with a robot hand petting R2, so you pretty much assume that's Luke. But
yes.
And then you see, like, a female, you know, somebody handing a female a lightsaber, and, like, pretty sure that's going to be Leia at some point. But, I mean, still watching this doesn't tell you anything about the movie, but it just looks amazing.
And, you know, I appreciate the way that they're doing, you know, these, you know, teasers and everything else, is because... You know, some of the trailers for other movies, all the key points in the trailer were the only good key points of the movie. So, you know, they're really keeping my interest stirred and alive here without giving away the entire story.
Yeah, I mean, the if you haven't seen it yet, go look it up. But the opening segment, it's like panning across this desert planet that we don't know if it's Tatooine or what. But you start to see this thing that you kind of think's a mountain. And then as it keeps panning, it's a crashed Star Destroyer out in the desert. And I mean, that alone was, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. It was awesome.
And then later, like I said, we finally see Han and Chewie. And then I said, so many, like when you hear that Chewie, we're home, and you can tell they're like on the Falcon. It's like, I got a serious nerd boner on that one.
Yeah. I mean, seeing the Millennium Falcon and, you know, some of the action sequences was badass too. I mean, reminded me of some of the previous movies and games and stuff that we played. So I was like, hell yeah.
And we see that scene of like a TIE fighter blowing up stuff. It looks like it's inside a ship or a base or something. And you're blowing up stormtroopers. And it was, I mean, it, as much as I'm so hopeful for this movie, I want to like it. We still don't know anything about the story. And I've got some worries from, but visually it's going to look amazing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. So far I've been pretty happy with everything that's, you know, Disney's kind of had their control over and everything, so I'm hoping that continues. And, dude, this trailer, it was like 88 million views within 24 hours or something. I think it shattered world records with the amount of views in that time frame.
The scenes of the X-Wings flying and, that little bit of dogfighting you see the Falcon doing, My only issue with this, because I'm still kind of pissed off about the whole EU being non-canon anymore, but I'm hoping that we're not still fighting the Empire. If the Empire is still the bad guy, it's been 30 years. The Rebellion's pretty shitty if they've not defeated the Empire yet.
Let's put it in real world time. Look at our battle with terrorism. Do you ever think that terrorism is going to be eradicated?
I mean, in the books, you know, they'd kind of already, you know, put the Empire aside, and there were so many other cool villains that popped up that, you know, and, like, you know, there was a whole the Jedi had been like fully reestablished and stuff. And if that's not occurred in this new timeline, I mean,
I think we're going to see an expansion timeline, and you know, some of the, you know, other characters and stuff like that that you're referencing from the books. I think this may be a great segue into getting, you know, some of those additional developments and everything. Is
I'm almost,
my thoughts at least.
I want to see some Nogri assassins too.
Yes,
but and then, like some of the newer TIE fighters look weird. They got these white wings and stuff. But yeah, if the Empire is still the main bad guy, I'm going to be kind of disappointed. But I tell you what, some of the great visuals, and I saw someone online had taken just still shots from the trailer, trying to kind of break it down. And one of them was, of course, we see Vader's kind of melted helmet on like it looks like a pedestal or something. And that scene I talked about where there's someone handing a lady a lightsaber, if you notice, that's Luke's original. It's not his current lightsaber. It's his original lightsaber that he lost when he got his hand cut off in Empire Strikes Back. So, I mean, someone has found that lightsaber somewhere. You know, that's like the original Anakin lightsaber that Obi-Wan gave him. So I'm interested in seeing how that's going to affect... play into the storyline.
So, I mean, you know, based on, you know, the first couple of trailers where everything looked kind of, you know, futuristic, this one is, you know, kind of almost looks a little bit prequelish. So
yeah, I mean, it definitely looks like Star Wars. If nothing, I don't know what the storyline's going to be like, but it definitely looks like Star Wars.
So, I mean, I wonder if maybe we have a short, you know, segment on destroying of the Empire or something, and then it goes into the, you know, more...
Yeah, we're still seeing a lot of those new characters they're planning to introduce, too. So I want to see more of the original guys in the movie. I'm hoping they're not just, like, you know, a cameo. I'm hoping we get some, like, you know, quality storyline with the heroes we know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think with the film that all questions will be answered, or who knows, you know, maybe they try to go the original route and... You know, maybe they circle back at some point, and I don't know, man. Like you said, I got more questions than I do answers. So,
and we know with all the spinoffs that they're going to be doing, they're going to be inside and outside the timeline. So, for some of these solo projects they're talking about, you know, take place in different time frames. Like another, like we got a teaser trailer for the Rogue One film that we talked about. And that one, from what I'm hearing...
Is this between episode 3 and 4 of Rogue One, or...?
No, I think it's going to be actually before... between 3 and 4. Because it's... from what I hear, it's going to be the story of people stealing the original Death Star plans.
Which, to me, I think is badass.
Because Rogue One, like, I pretty much thought it was a reference to, like, it was going to be like Top Gun, but with X-Wings.
So we're just going to have to, you know, suck it up, Buttercup, and, you know, break out Rogue Squadron and just play it, you know, continually.
I mean,
and
the teaser trailer, you hear, you know, Obi-Wan voiceover talking about, you know, the Jedi and stuff, and then you see this kind of this jungle planet with a TIE fighter flying by, and you kind of see what looks like a moon on the horizon, but then you realize it's not a moon, it's the freaking Death Star.
That's no moon, it's a space station.
So yeah, from what I'm hearing, this movie's going to be about that, you know, team that went to steal the Death Star plans from episode 4.
Yeah,
I'm interested to see how that's going to turn out.
Absolutely. We also got the Rebels second season trailer that also came out,
really,
and it looks
about.
Freaking awesome. I mean, first season was badass. I mean, it had me suckered in.
Yeah, Darth Vader's looks like he's gonna be a big part of season 2, and it's actually voiced by James Earl Jones. I was like, oh my! I was like, that is the Darth Vader voice.
Yes.
That's not somebody pretending to be. That is freaking Vader. And we also see a lot of the characters from the Clone Wars series now coming in, because the whatever Rex and Cody and like those you know. Trooper commanders from now they're kind of old men or whatever, but yeah, apparently they join up in the rebellion and stuff. It's pretty bad seeing, you know, Cody with like a freaking beard. He's like this grizzled old man. And he's like, I hope y'all bought a better army than freaking stormtroopers. like these old clone commandos are like looking down on like the freaking stormtroopers. Like these guys suck.
Yeah. Another trailer that came out that I was a little bit conflicted. I didn't think I was going to be interested in at all, and then I broke it down and watched it, the Fantastic Four trailer.
Yeah.
And, you know, from what I saw, I'm going to give the movie a chance. You know, I wasn't all that excited, but there toward the end, seeing Thing come out of the airplane like a freaking atomic bomb or something like that. I mean, I was like, all right, that's badass.
Yeah, that and the first image we get of Dr. Doom, too. That definitely is going to look cool. Some other things that came out of, before we move on, came out of Celebration that was particularly interest to me. Was the next wave of the X-Wing game has been released, because I have all those freaking games. We've had some epic battles here in the Nerve Cave, but the next four ships that are coming out later this year, we're getting the Houndstooth, which is Bosk's ship. So now we've got IG-88 ship, Fett ship, and Bosk ship. We've almost got a complete bounty hunter contingent. There's some kind of, I can't remember what it's called, but it's a Black Sun fighter for the Scum and Villainy set. There's a TIE Advanced Bomber, which looks freaking wicked. It's like a TIE Bomber, but it has four missile pods on it. So that thing's going to mess some stuff up. And then a K-Wing, which I'm not familiar with that. I don't know where that may be something from a comic book or something, because I've never seen an A-Wing, but it's kind of an advanced...
Not A-Wing, but K-Wing,
no,
right?
K-Wing, yeah, K-Wing. Yeah. Advanced, like, Rebel Bomber of some kind. Looks almost something from, like, the Clone Wars era. It's weird looking, but yeah, we've got those new ships. And also, they did a... if everyone remembers the ball droid thing we saw in the first teaser trailer, it turns out that's not a digital effect. That is a fully practical droid that they've built, and they did a press conference and they had it roll out on stage and roll around. And I don't know how they made that thing.
Want to see the science and the, you know, yeah, the driving force behind
the ball part. It looks like it has full, like, you know, range of movement, and that dome somehow sits on top of it without.
Yeah, I mean,
off.
At one point we were trying to, you know, all right, is it magnets just using, you know, same polarity to create, you know, an opposing force? But
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that was going to be a real thing and not a digital effect. It looks like JJ's trying to do a lot of practical effects in this movie,
which. You know what? CGI has its place, but...
I like to see it mixed in with, like, real effects. But yeah, in that press conference, they brought out R2 and I think it's called DB-8 or DB-88 or something like that. But yeah, it's about half the size of R2, but it's, like I said, seeing that as a functioning robot was pretty amazing to me. That, and I think they've also announced in the comic book series, if you've been following that, Lando's getting his own title. So we're going to get to see some pimp action.
Yeah, I kind of fell off. You know, I was... collecting them, and hell, they're probably at the comic book shop. I just need to get up there and pick them up, because I fell a little bit behind on Vader.
Yeah, I haven't checked my box this month, so I've probably got three or four issues waiting for me whenever I have money to go back up there. But yeah, moving on from there, we also got the Fantastic Four and Superman Dawn of Justice.
Dude, yeah, I mean,
premiered.
Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice trailer was... I'm not a big fan of Superman. You know, I've got some friends that are obsessed with Superman.
Superman has always just been the Boy Scout to me. He's been kind of boring as a character.
I don't know, man. This trailer was dark, and it did something for my psyche, and I was like, all right, that's pretty sweet.
And we get our first kind of glimpse of, you know, Batfleck in a few scenes, and like the badass armored bat suit too, and I mean,
one scene, you know, where it's like the damaged building or whatever, and it's like God's fail or something like that that's written in red on it, you know, I was like...
I mean, it almost looks like Superman's kind of gone, you know, like...
cryptic.
Yeah, like he's, you know, like, you know, he's kind of like trying to become like a conquering the earth and instead of saving him, Batman's got to like put him straight or something. It's a teaser trailer, so it didn't really give us a whole hell of a lot. But, I mean, the last two Superman movies I've hated. I did not like Superman Returns. I didn't like Man of Steel. I mean, I just did not do anything for me. But I love Batman, and I love the Batman movie, so I'm wanting this to be good.
You see what's over there that's, you know, the
60s
Batmobile. My model car collection.
So, yeah, I want this movie to be good, but I'm not... I don't have high hopes at this point, because, like I said, the last two Superman movies have just been have not been something that I really want to watch again. I'm going to give it a shot just because, I mean, Batman's in it, so I'm hoping it's better than that freaking Superman movie we got.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but I think with our next venture, we're going to be forced to give it a shot.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. Another interesting tidbit of news that I thought was interesting is it looks like Celebrity Deathmatch is going to come back now, which
I've not read anything. Is this going to be like a whole new series, or are they just like, you know, redoing the old stuff? Or I mean, is it a you're actually bringing it back with new episodes?
I mean, from what I hear, MTV2 is reviving Celebrity Death Match back, so I think it's going to, you know, focus on, you know, renewed new content and basically keep some of the same insane antics and everything else that we're familiar with originally. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be basically a modern version.
I always enjoyed the Celebrity Deathmatch. Those were some hilarious, hilarious. I was like, you know, when MTV stopped playing music, that was one of the few things that would make me watch MTV. It was Celebrity Deathmatch and Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, I don't know.
Now it's like all reality TV, but back when they actually had like...
And I don't know whose reality it is, yeah. But their reality's too dumb for me. I guess in closing here, I haven't completed the entire season yet, but I'm a little over halfway. Daredevil.
Yeah, the Daredevil released, April 10th?
And I got to say, man, from what I've seen so far, and you can elaborate on this since you've seen the complete season, it was as badass as I had hoped it would be. I mean, it's dark. I mean, it's, you know.
I watched that entire season in 2 days. Man, I didn't sleep much. I was like, I'm going to watch like an episode or two before bed. And the next thing it was like 5 a.m. I'm like 8 episodes in.
You're texting me like, dude. have you watched this yet?
Yeah. I mean, freaking Daredevil starting out. I made the joke. He reminds me of Kenshi, the blind swordsman from Mortal Kombat. He kind of, that first costume he has kind of reminds me of that. I wonder how many of those we're going to see at Dragon Con this year. Some BDU pants and a Under Armour shirt and like a black mask wrapped around your face.
I mean, dude, looking for your first costume, I mean, that's a very easy, practical costume to pull off. So.
Oh, yeah, that was the easy one. But yeah, spoiler alert, he eventually gets the Daredevil costume. So, when I first heard about it, I was expecting something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., a little bit more comedic. But being this is like a Netflix show and not censored as something, because most stuff you end up watching on Netflix has been on TV at some point, so it had to be edited for TV. But since this is a Netflix series, they can put as much violence and language and whatever they want to. So, I mean, it is like bloody as hell.
Yeah, it's pretty dark, too. I mean,
it is very dark for a Marvel project we've seen so far. I mean, everything we've seen now has been kind of lighthearted, and this was definitely a serious show.
So, I mean, it like I said, it was everything that I had hoped it would be. So, you know, I'm...
Yeah. My thing was, I thought, at first I was kind of off-put by the character of the Kingpin, because he was kind of like a little neurotic, or, you know, he was almost like an abused kid, which, you know, he pretty much is. And yeah, I'm used to seeing him in comics and cartoons as this, you know, full-on gangster dude. But then I realized not only is this an origin story of Daredevil, it's also an origin story of the Kingpin. And as the series goes on, you see him become that self-confident gangster guy, you know, as the series progresses.
So I wonder if Netflix is going to take the ball after the success of Daredevil and everything, if we're not going to see, you know, some of these other characters start getting their own, you know, Netflix series and stuff.
Well, right now they got 4 planned. Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. Jessica Jones is the next one. I think it's going to come out this December, November area from what I'm hearing. And that's not a character that I'm very familiar with. I had to look that one up, but that's supposed to be like the next in the series. And then once all 4 series comes out, they're going to do like a kind of like a mini series movie with all 4 characters together. And, you know, eventually we may see them tie into the larger Marvel universe, because we know everything's connected, and this definitely takes place in our Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yep. So, I don't know. I guess the girls at MCU will be filling us in and keeping us up to date on everything. So,
yeah, I was very impressed with Daredevil. I can't wait for the next installment of the Netflix MCU.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, they did a phenomenal job with it, so...
Definitely better than the, I mean, I kind of like the Affleck Daredevil movie, but yeah, this series was definitely...
I mean, it took it to a whole new level.
Yeah. Also, I almost forgot the, we got, is it out yet? The, Star Wars Battlefront, or is just the, I know the trailer just came out.
No, I think there was some gameplay at, the Star Wars, Celebration, but... I don't think it has officially released
yet.
Yeah,
I've not been to GameStop. I know Mortal Kombat X came out. That's
yeah.
In fact, I've got us a
PS4 lined up that my friend's going to let us borrow so we can rush out and actually get some gameplay and do a...
yeah, but that whatever trailer for Battlefront looks awesome. I mean,
trailer looks awesome. I was reading an article
today. You can see Fett. You get to play as Fett and blow shit up.
You know, encouraging folks not to pre-order this for some reason. And I didn't get into all the nitty-gritty on that, but, you know, it's kind of got me curious there as to,
maybe there'll be some kind of special edition or something comes out. But yeah, you get to... I want to play as Boba Fett. That's, I saw that scene where you're like, you're getting the full Fett. I'm like, oh, I'm sold. Take my money now.
Yes, all of it. So any final closing thoughts or anything else that we might have missed? Or
one final thought I had. Well, we've kind of teased it, and I'm just going to go ahead and announce it. That way we have to do it, and that way no one else steals our idea. We're actually going to start a second podcast. Right now, we're talking about end of May, starting it up, but it's going to be called Earth Station DCU, where we're going to follow basically Flash, Arrow, Gotham, all the kind of like a weekly review of all the DC TV shows that are on there. So we're going to try to start with the season finales and then, you know, kind of recap the previous seasons throughout the summer, and then once the new shows start, we'll be going, you know, doing a weekly show of that, talking about, you know, whatever is on TV that week, or
yeah,
you know,
and
when
just
the movies
to,
come
you know,
out
let you folks know, to go in a little bit more detail, this is not going to be, you know, the Cigar Nerds rebooted. We're actually going to have some additional hosts and cast members and stuff like that.
Yeah, so you won't have to listen to just our opinion.
Yes,
but yeah, here's a preview. I saw something this week on Flash that I was like, what the fuck. the character of the Atom was on Flash, and he's basically like their version of Iron Man, and he's getting chased by a swarm of robotic bees, and they're like, fly through the water, it'll kill the robots. And he's like, well, it'll sort out my suit. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? You built like a badass armored suit that can take bullets, but you didn't think to waterproof it?
I'm just gonna throw it out there, though. I mean, we saw that in the movie Signs, right? I mean, the aliens invaded a planet that is, you know, 75-80% water, and that is their weakness.
So what's this dude supposed
to
do?
You know,
he's like, sorry, Justice League, I can't fight crime today. I know the Joker's killing everybody, but it's raining outside. You know, call me when it's dry outside, and I'll come help you guys out.
Maybe small amounts of water. Maybe not a complete submersion.
It's water resistant, not waterproof. Yeah, maybe so. All right, well, I guess that wraps us up for this episode. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Cigar Nerd Pod. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, email us at cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com. Check us out on the ESO network at esopodcast.com or our website, cigarnerdpodcast.com. And remember, folks, Dave's not here. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.